Mme Priscilla Themba, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, and I represent Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. Members will join us as we as time goes. You know, we in the NCOP we've got many responsibilities and we serve in many committees. So the others are still in other meetings. But in the meantime, we will start and they'll join us. We will apologize to them for starting before they arrive. Honorable Lenzana, can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zola Mlenzana, a member of the Select Committee representing the province of the Eastern Cape, Mpuma Kapa.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, everybody. I am Vesela Jacobs, representing the Free State.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Loli Sibisi. I am the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Eric Boscati. I'm the colonial advisor for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Ronelle Barreto, and I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Jose Chueu from ESCOM.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Dan Marokani. I'm the group executive for Group Capital in ESCOM.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think it's working.
Yes,
okay. My name is Karen De Villiers. I'm from ESCOM.
My name is Mapelo Mbonelo from ESCOM.
I'm Nombini Matomela from ESCOM.
Good morning, I'm Doro Koso from ESCOM.
Also from ESCOM, my name is Kulu Pasiwe.
Rahima Esop, member of the media.
Huh? Which media? Oh, I
Which
media?
Eyewitness News.
Oh.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Saif Islam. I'm representing Ethica Consulting.
Can use this one so that you get the blessings from the chair.
Uh-huh. Good morning. My name is Trevor Sampson. I'm a photographer with Business Day. Thank you.
Morning. Amanda, PMG. Sorry.
Without any waste of time, our agenda today, we will be briefed by ESCOM on the update on ESCOM and Medupi. And let me say we've got few apologies. Honorable Sibande, representing Mpumalanga, has apologized, and Honorable Star will also join us late, like I said, with other members. And I also want to apologize for the CEO, Mr. Brian. Who has just landed from, or can you say the apology?
The apology from a chief executive who is unable to join the committee today. I was given a very nice instruction to fly down here myself to hold the fort in the interim.
Okay. Okay, without any waste of time, let's hear what ESCOM has to tell us with everything that is has been happening, especially at Mundubi. Thanks. Over to you.
Chairperson, members of the committee, thank you very much for the invitation to really bring yourselves up to speed with the progress on Mundubi construction in particular. Following your visitation to the site last year at around this time, looking back at the records, a lot has happened, and I'm hoping that through the presentation you'll get a sense, even if you're not on site physically, of the progress in construction that has taken place since then. Of course, we today are going to cover the progress update as per the specific request, also deal with some of the technical issues that have been quite topical in our engagements with South Africa at large in the last 3 months or so, update you on how we're progressing on the resolution. We'll talk about issues pertaining to our major contractors, and of course the issue of labor itself. And that's really the essence of the presentation that we have circulated, Chairperson. Just a starting point, a few snapshots coming from the construction site. As you can see, those of you who were able to visit the site last year, this is a picture of the site as you come in from the main road to the Sky Station. You'll see on your, the visibility is not so good. I don't know if members have got copies of the presentation itself. If you look on the picture displayed, to your left, you can actually see the first Unit 6 boiler, which is clad. It's very different from the rest of the structures. We've got the silver cladding that shows that the metal structures have now been completed and they're wrapped around for insulation, and that gives them also a much more appealing view of the structure itself. That's quite a significant progress because that tends to be the last stages of wrapping up the boiler unit itself. The second structure continues to show progress with regards to the coal stockyard, the chimneys, and other boiler structures for Unit 5, 4, 3, and 2. The coal stockyard, very important to have begun to do the collection of coal required for firing the boiler once it starts online. And that has also been successfully completed. Very key to the power generation process itself is the water treatment plant, the facilities for handling fly ash, the air-cooled condensers. The picture shows the completion. This is a significant shift from what you have seen around this time last year when you visited the site, and we're ready to really deal with the rest of the balance of plants to support the unit when it comes online. The next picture is a different slide view in terms of Unit 5 and 6. Chairperson, it's very important to for us to remain focused that we are building effectively 12 units of 800 megawatts each, and much as the focus is around Unit 6 in its commissioning, it's very important that we keep track that Unit 5, 4, 3, and 2, and 1 also need to come in. So we continue to show progress with regards to the subsequent units. You know, after we finish with Unit 6, we have to be moving on with Unit 5. The rainwater reservoir completed and functional. These are very important auxiliary processes for us to go on. So we have also tried on a timeline to show some of the major commissioning milestones that have been achieved to date. It's important that different parts of the supporting areas are ready and available, starting from the feed water tank, the rainwater tanks, the Unit 6.
Okay. I want to welcome the Department of Public Enterprises. I wonder why they can arrive after, you know, we are children. You are the department and you arrive late. Why? But you are more than welcome.
Apologies. Okay. We apologize.
All right. Over to you. Sorry about
that. Thank you, Chair. As indicated, we have also begun commissioning some parts of the plan that are vital to supporting the overall firing of the boiler. And we have just shown this pictorially, which is the picture that we've seen before. In the next slide, Chair, we started to give a sense of why the importance of the different areas. We are now able, through back energizing, able to draw power from the 400 kV distribution network. This allows us to continue to do the work through construction, but of course this becomes a back route along which we'll be evacuating power once we start the units. The auxiliary blow through, auxiliary boiler has been commissioned. It's very important. It's the first starter to producing steam, and we have already produced the first steam in June. At the site, we have put the turbine on bearing. The assembly of the turbine is a very complicated and precision-based process, and that's been successful on Unit 6, together with the running of the fence. All these activities, the scraper that removes the ash from the boiler once the coal is burned, it's all integral towards the final commissioning of the unit so we can get everything working in sync. It's important that at every stage as we complete this, we become successful in all these milestones. Again, the boiler mills used for crushing the coal have successfully done their 1-hour test runs, and the water treatment storage facility is ready for us to go. The most important step, Chair, is really moving from towards the first synchronization, the date of the first synchronization, which we have indicated to South Africa as a whole, that that date has moved from the December 2013 to the second half of next year. And we have indicated that once we arrive at the milestone of the chemical clean, which is the process of removing all dead material and deposits left in the pipelines during construction, from that stage through to first synchronization, we're looking at a window of about 6 months, introducing the fires, going through the blow through, and getting steam into the turbine for power generation. Of course, that date of December 2013, when we announced it, we indicated a number of glitches that are resulting in it, and I'll be spending time today in the presentation to bring the members up to speed with what exactly is behind those. In the slide on showing potential delays, we've become quite explicit in the number of the risks that we see in the process. And this, I need to emphasize, are the risks that we are managing, that the project team is continuously tracking to see how we're performing every day and what solutions we may have to bring up to board with it. Of course, the first one that applies to all packages, i.e. all sub-works areas within the project, relates to just the ability to do the work. So the continued strikes do impact on the rate at which we do the work. We have technical issues with one of the major equipments called the reheater that may require extensive realignment around the tubes, and I'll talk a bit about it. We have spoken about the post-weld heat treatment, the welding issues, quite extensively. One being the need to redo the welding because the welding procedures were fraudulent, inaccurate, and we have also spoken about the boiler protection system, which is part of the control and instrumentation for running the plant once it's commissioned. It's really the heart and brains of how you control the plant once it's run, and we'll spend some time on that. The other, what we've shown on the slide, Chairperson, you'll see it's some bars that's got the months, indicative months. And these months are all in relation to the December date that we are targeting. So you will see that at most you have overruns of up to 4 months over the date that we are pushing, the date beyond overruns, beyond the December date that we are pushing for. And what we're doing as a team is seeing how do we draw this month as close as possible to where we intended to be, or to control it to not go in excess of the month that we have indicated in that area. These challenges beyond the control systems, of course, are around you know, insufficient construction labor on site to do some of the work that's remaining around the water treatment plants, the CNI cabling. There's a lot of cabling that still needs to be run around the plant, and we are concentrating on kilometers of cabling pulled on a weekly basis. The loop checks, these are all about ensuring that the right connections are in place for controlling equipment and the overall electrical cabling that provides power across the site. So we've broken it down to this level, and every week we're engaging with contractors around how we're driving these risks down. When we spoke about the delays to December 2013, we primarily raised three issues. One around the boiling, the boiler welding procedure qualification records that applies to Unit 6 and to some extent to Unit 5. And you see in the slide there we've circulated Unit 6 because all these issues, we picked them up as we're preparing ourselves for Unit 6. The resolution of these challenges in Unit 6 means the resolution for subsequent units. So most of the learning curves in the construction of these two power stations, Midupi and Kusile, actually are coming out of Unit 6. So we solve these issues on Unit 6. It becomes a replication of literally almost cut and paste when you go through to the rest of the unit. So it becomes important that we learn these things, painful as they are, but we ensure that they do not happen subsequently in the rest of the units, and we can move at a faster pace for the rest of the units. There's also the issue of the post-weld heat treatment, and I'll explain what these are, and then the control and instrumentation process. So when we go to the first issue about the weld procedure qualification records, what we call the WPQRs, Chair, that structure that we saw earlier on around the boiler is really, a boiler is a huge structure made up of pipes, large number of tubes that are joined together through precision welding, and it's important that the welding process is done according to a particular code, that is an engineering code that is applicable. For that, you are required to produce a welding procedure upfront that you test in the lab, and once it has been successful, you then go and replicate this welding method out on site. What became very clear for us is that there was a glitch in the production of these welding procedures by one of the Hitachi subcontractors that was picked up too late because of a lapse in quality control on their side. And when we picked this up, we had to go back and identify the welds that have actually been executed without the presence of this welding procedure. So all the 30 non-compliant welding procedures had to be resampled, and they required to be redone under the watch of the welding authorities. Of course, this meant that having done the work, it meant going back and having to redo it, which add up to schedule. As we speak, the affected welds have all been repaired by the end of July. It has taken time out of the schedule that we had, and we'll go back and show you in the pictorial diagram the completion and progress also with the other issues. The related matter, Chair, was also around the post-weld heat treatment. So once you have joined tubes together at high temperatures, you also require a particular procedure to treat the area around the joints that has been affected by the heat during the welding procedure. It's important to do so because what actually happens is that as you heat the material to be joined together, you also create some weaknesses in the structure of the material itself. And if left untreated, such weaknesses tend to fail under operating conditions. So there is a process of almost healing the affected zones through a heat treatment process, which is a long cycle of heat exposure that allows the material to regain its abilities, structural abilities and strength. In this instance, a fraudulent activity was picked up where a simulation was done that indicated that the heat treatment was executed whilst this was not the case. And this has been handed over to the police. It's a matter of criminal investigation also from the side of the contractors. This meant that we had to go back and redo heat treatment in some instances, or also cut back some of the welds to redo them and do the heat treatment. So this deals with challenges of welding primarily that befallen the contractor Hitachi in particular. Chair, the assets, the well repairs that had to be done have been completed, that were affected by the WPQRs have been completed, and we are now going through execution of the post-welding heat treatment cycle for the affected wells. And we are comfortable that technically we now have solutions for dealing with both these issues. What is important is just the progression of execution. So it's about getting shoulders down to the wheel and doing the work and carrying it out. We have gone through a very painful process of determining where do we redo the work completely and where do we find engineering solutions that get us back to be code compliant. So this has been one big tick for us in terms of the execution of the project. There is another issue, Chair, relating to work that needs to be done around the reheater alignment that we are currently dealing with our major contractor Hitachi as well. This has got to do with tubes that are not perfectly in line, that are running the risk of early failure once the plant is brought into operation. And we have we are now engaging with the contractor to prepare to re-enter this this unit, the reheaters, to realign the tubes and get us back to the design conditions as required. This will take about 4 months of work, and it's also part of the contributory factors that will see us seeing the first synchronization in the second half of next year. We're comfortable this work will also be executed successfully, having identified the actual flaw in the original execution of the work. There was an issue around the startup vessel. Chair, this we are comfortable, we have a solution around. It's also one of the post-work heat treatment issues that we have in the last month successfully tested execution method in Germany, and we are preparing on site to do the physical execution. We've actually simulated it already twice on one of the units, Unit 4, which is still in its execution stages. So if I may leave the committee with any clear indication coming from the problems we had, Chairperson, the welding issues that pertain to Unit 6, both around the welding procedure qualification and the post-weld heat treatment, have all been technically solved. We are comfortable with the solution. When we went to do the announcement around the delay, we are still figuring out how to solve some of the issues. We have sorted those out. What is remaining is for us to do the execution and do the work out and pick up our work pace to remain on track. So that's one key issue. Excuse me. Chair, the second issue related to the control and instrumentation. The unit, like our existing power stations, will be controlled through a distributed control system. It's actually a complex computer arrangement that allows giving instructions to and back from the different equipment and monitoring the performance, both from efficiency perspective but also from a safety point of view. Alstom is a major contractor for installing the DCS system. And as per requirements, each and every stage of building the solution requires factory acceptance tests, which are essentially quality tick-off points of saying this unit meets all the requirements to proceed to the next stage, excuse me, until it's constructed and installed on site. What we saw, Chair, is a number of repeated factory acceptance failures due to errors and omissions in the design. And we engaged with Alstom together with our engineering team to assist in resolving the problems closer and as quickly as possible at their design houses in Europe, with our engineering team based there all the time to ensure we have minimal time lost as a result of this. As we speak, a number of patches, Chairperson, have been patches are solutions that are given through to the design as we go through, have been installed in some of the systems, and we are comfortable with how we are progressing on those. The only challenge being, major challenge that's still remaining, being around a control system that is safety related, that monitors and manages the pressure and operation of the boiler. The boiler is a high pressure vessel. Safety is very important, that it does not run out of control, because it will put lives and property at risk if it's not appropriately controlled. This is effectively like having your safety systems on your car not functional, and you cannot predict how your car safety systems will come into your rescue should your car be traveling in conditions that are not, that are hazardous. We have, as ESCOM, we've continued to work closely with our contractor to try to remedy this, but we have also not set back, awaiting for the solution only from this contractor, and have opted to take at-risk initiatives that will see an alternative supplier being ready to provide us a solution in time for us to meet the second half of next year synchronization time. So in the next few weeks, we will take through our governance committees the final decisions on how we proceed, on what options we will settle with, and all this is intended to stay within the timelines that we've indicated for bringing the units out in the unit out in the second half of the year. We have also taken extra extra care in asking support from a German utility of our magnitude that have and have experienced similar challenges in its own constructions, to really offer us an independent perspective around some of the solutions we're trying to implement, to ensure that at least from an assurance point of view, in as far as safety is concerned, we do not have any blind spots. And that report is now with our teams for internalization. Chair, whilst dealing with the solution from Unit 6, we are also conscious of the fact that we need to move very quickly and deal with the situation for Unit 5, Unit 4, 4, 3, 2, and 1. And so we are in parallel, without prejudice and without compromising our commercial positions, readying ourselves for a potential alternative supplier to address unit the rest of the units. But as I said, this will this will be taken in the next few weeks, fully within the contractual arrangements that we have. And I'll leave it at that note. We will always provide an update once we reach that key strategic point. One of the issues, Chair, that the committee asked that we also indulge on is about how we going on with contractor management at the site. We have established quite a number of forums on site to improve dialogue, to improve alignment and focus on our project milestones. So we have on a fortnightly week basis a CEO's forum, and the CEOs of the companies, all our major contractors and our subcontractors, come into Midupi. We have a morning session where we engage around the progress and any of the operational glitches that we see, and in the afternoon we spend time doing site work, planned works, to physically inspect progress and areas that may have bottlenecks on site. And this helps to resolve issues even for the supervisors who are managing the contracts on a day-to-day basis. Around that, we have set up also a team that deals with resolution of claims. The committee will appreciate that as you start moving into delays and so on, contractually you end up in an area where there's claims and counterclaims around standing times, around changes of scope and so on. And it's important that these issues get addressed and resolved speedily. One, for ensuring that we keep our cost exposure at the minimum, but also to ensure that you create an atmosphere where there is a healthy relationship with all your subcontractors, so we can have all our eyes on completing the job. We've also set up a number of other forums, executive consultation forum, which meets on a quarterly basis. This is between, this is amongst ourselves, ESCOM, the contractors, and organized labor. And this also provides a platform for resolving issues before they become, they get themselves tangled with our focus of getting the job done. We have consultative forums which deals with site-specific issues. And Chair, I must be honest, at some of the sites, these forums work much more effectively than others. And I mean, when I talk about some of the sites, I specifically refer to Kusile and Midupi. What we're doing at Midupi is what we're doing at Kusile, because we're managing both sides under the same attention of meeting our timelines and having very peaceful execution of our task in that area. And in Midupi areas, we're picking up, I guess, much more slower than we're doing on the Kusile side. Together with the Performance Improvement Center, where we create visibility on a daily basis, every morning, all contractors in one room to see what have we done for yesterday, what do we need to do for today, where are the glitches, who needs to be assisted by reorganizing our planning together. So it's more of a collaborative approach to getting our tasks executed. We have a leadership forum that encompasses contractors and organized labor from both sides that meets and deals with issues that are project specific and not necessarily site specific, and that's the areas at which we iron out common issues relating to labor relations on site. Chair, we've also dealt with the issue around the Hitachi performance bonds. We have advised earlier this year that we had pulled the Alstom performance bond due to the non-performance on the control and instrumentation part of the contract. We intended doing the same with Hitachi, given the delays in the construction on their side. We looked at the total money at risk for Hitachi as a company. In as far as doing that is concerned, we advised the other committees that we had considered it more prudent to actually have more skin in the game for Hitachi, given the the size of the contract that they have and the extensive work that they have. All the steel structures that we saw there are being constructed by Hitachi. And at the time, about a month ago, we were in deep conversations around actually getting Hitachi to commit more of their financial exposure so that we can remedy any problem coming out of the construction of the units. And we are in the last stages of finalizing an agreement where they'll have their bond figures actually reinstated to their original value. In the slide, on one slide there, we indicate what the total exposure for Hitachi is of 1.5 billion. If you think about the size of their contract, this is not so significant given the potential delays and damages on our part, and we've asked them to restore their bonds back to their original value, which was the 10% of the contract value for the first three units. And we're finalizing and going through the legalese to sign off the agreement in the next week. This will mean that Eskom has got a much more bigger hold on Hitachi as far as the performance bonds are concerned than would have been the case by calling the bond at this stage. And that's really to keep Hitachi focused on executing the times, the work expeditiously and within the required quality levels. The next issue, Chair, which I understand that in the last visit of the committee to Midupi, the committee had asked for a copy of the partnership, the project labor agreement, the PLA, which was set up to regulate the relationship between organized labor and the contractors. On both Midupi and Kusile. What has since happened, Chairperson, the project labor agreement has been replaced with a partnership agreement that was signed on the 12th of June. The partnership agreement, what is fundamentally different about it is that Eskom is no longer a bystander in this arrangement. Eskom is also a part of the tripartite arrangement, and we dealing with the issues relating to industrial relations with the contractors and their workers as a collective. And we have moved this route because we realize that standing by does not help us. It is us who are hitting if the project is not progressing very well. But there are also areas where we can best be located to help contractors deal with issues that are important to workers as well. And we have signed this partnership agreement on the 12th of June. It became effective after signature. It dealt with a number of areas relating to improvements in terms of minimum wages. It dealt with issues relating to dispute resolutions. It dealt with issues relating to standardization of traveling and commuting allowances, which were creating quite a lot of tension on site when workers next to each other were being remunerated differently and yet doing the same work. And these issues will tend to start in a small corner in one of the subcontractors, and before you know it, they actually rise to a point where they make the whole site unstable. And all this arrangement agreement here was reached mutually by all parties without anyone pulling off, both from the contractors, the laborers, organized labor, and ESCOM itself. Chair, the committing, and so once we signed this agreement on the 12th of June, on the 24th of June of July, we had an industrial action erupting on site that you may have seen on television, ugly pictures of the level of violence and destruction to property that happened there. And I just need to talk about what precipitated that incident at Midupi, because it did not happen at Kusilo. It was around the miscommunication of some of the agreements signed on the 12th of June, particularly relating to commuting allowance. Commuting allowance was introduced and considered by all the parties on the 12th of June as a means of addressing vulnerabilities of workers who spend in excess of 1 hour traveling to work. In Lephalale, we have quite extensive accommodation within a one-hour radius, travel radius to site. But there are also workers who live 2.5 to 3 hours away from site who spend a lot of time commuting through to work. And Labour had raised this issue, resulting in the partnership forum agreeing that workers who travel in excess of 1 hour will be remunerated proportionally to the time that they take to get to work. It appears that in the communication of this agreement, an impression was made that every worker will be entitled to the basic 1 hour community through to work, which is not the intention. The intention was to protect the most vulnerable of the workers, and not necessarily everyone who lives within a particular distance to site. The second issue was relating to the traveling allowance. We had standardized traveling allowance from very different rates, where some workers were getting 90 cents per kilometer and some were getting 350 per kilometer. This was causing a lot of tension on site. We standardized on 250 per kilometer for everyone. But as per practice, the construction companies do not work only at Midupi. They work all over the country from one project to the other. They have institutionalized assistance to their workers in as far as commuting is concerned. And they tend to, in some instances, have buses that take their workers from construction areas to a central point where they have access to logistics to the rest of the country. And in this instance, subsequent to the agreement, a view by organized labor was that this money should be paid and no arrangements for individual companies should be in place to go to central places, which is a stance that, as ESCOM, we felt this is an area we could not dabble into, given the uniqueness of the arrangements that contracts have, given that they work all over the country from time to time. What was important for us was that the standardization in its remuneration, and at company level, then the issues relating to transportation on long-term basis should be dealt with, because beyond Midupi, we do not have influence on the workings of individual companies going forth. Chair, we also became very... So these were the two issues that triggered the strike. When the strike started off, we spent time re-emphasizing the importance of what has been agreed to and the need to also finalize other agreements. Other agreements dealt with a new mechanism and new agreement on the dispute resolution so that there's clarity around how we resolve disputes on site. Skills development, very important that the skills development is addressed to ensure that people get skilled as they go through the project and are able to be employable as they go to other projects beyond this project's life. and we also dealt with wage standardization across the two project sites, where we're looking at removing wage differentials that could be that were as a result of race and gender bias. It is important that we also address this issue, and we are in the process of finalizing agreements in that regard for implementation from the September payroll. So this is a very important part of getting and putting to bed the June 12th new partnership agreements that is signed by all parties, ESCOM, the contractors, and organized labor. All parties, Chair, relating to the last dispute, were very clear that disciplinary processes have to be upheld on site, unlawful acts needs to be accounted for, and appropriate accountabilities be put to those who have put them up, and this is a stance that we came through with in our negotiations and engagement subsequent to the strike, and that now, as we have gone and everybody's back at work, disciplinary processes are ongoing in line with the disciplinary agreements that we had agreed to by all parties, and you know the affected parties will be given an opportunity for their own representation, but that justice should be served. Alongside that, Chair, we also agreed that the issue of 1 hour travelling, as Labour was now requesting that we implement it, was not acceptable. We agreed that we will work collectively on both sides to establish appropriate travelling times. I think there were material issues that came out of the conversations with organised labour around the implementation of some of the agreements that indeed required some correction relating to, you know, what points do you start measuring the travelling time, what are the impact of time that is just consumed on sites. Our sites are quite big, and it became very clear that in some instances employees do spend a lot of time still travelling inside the construction site itself, that when added to your departure point does make a change, because they do have to get up much more earlier to make up the time. So we agreed to set up task teams on both sides that are doing the route surveys and agreeing on points, that there is really control back to the sites by mutually agreed committees on how the physical measuring and the time estimations are arrived at, and that we then apply the rule of the 1 hour, in excess of 1 hour transportation through to site. It was also very clear in the engagement that we needed to work harder on our communication as all parties on site, improving employer-employee communications. There's a huge amount of work to be done in this area. We cannot over-communicate on construction sites of our size, and so each and every of the sites now will drive the communications of important issues that are signed by all three parties to ensure that there's no confusion or any misinterpretation coming out of joint decisions taking place. So, sir, as it stands now, Chairperson, the sites are really getting themselves into that mode of a new cooperative space. It's a journey. It will not be sorted out in one day, but I'm comfortable that all parties are really committed to this. We just have to put our shoulders behind the wheel and make this work. We were, of course, affected by the construction industry strike, not specifically to us, but of course our employees, or the contractor employees, belong to national structures. By and large, very peaceful. We had organized areas for picketing that were observed. What's important for us is to really get our site back to construction to a higher productivity point. Chair, the signing of the partnership agreement was important in closing up all niggling issues of the past. We closed up a lot of grievances, about 13 major grievances, in the run-up to the signing of the partnership agreement. That environment allows us to begin to have deep conversations about how do we improve productivity overall. As said, the Unit 6 is providing us a good learning curve that we need to take advantage of and take the lessons to the next units. And so our next focal point on both sides is about improving productivity, getting the right ratio of supervision, doing better work planning, collaborating more between contractors, creating more visibility, so we can have very little time wasted with non-construction related issues. Chairperson, if I may stop here, that really sums up the updates from our perspective, and I'll happily take questions from the committee.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Does the department want to say something?
There is.
If you can introduce yourself and.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. There isn't much which we need to say in this regard. But I think what I need to mention is that from the department, we have been also undertaking some reviews. Sorry, madam. My name is Jabu Mangena from the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm the Director for Energy. I need to mention that from the department, we have been undertaking somewhat an independent review on these mega projects, trying to have an understanding in terms of all the challenges, and also trying to have an understanding in terms of saying what solutions we can actually suggest as from the department side. And also I need to mention that the reviews are trying to reflect on how we can actually do things better going forward. I think I need to mention that of recent there's been a talk of that there is a possibility that ESCOM will have to go ahead with call 3, and from the reviews, we are actually saying we need to make sure that certain things which ought to have been undertaken towards Gusile and Mudupi, this time around, we need to make sure that we have proper upfront planning, because some of these challenges which ESCOM is faced with, it's because they did not have enough ample time to actually do certain things up front. Hence, we are experiencing some of these challenges. So from the reviews which we are having, we are going to work together with ESCOM. What is important to mention also is that some of the things which have come out of the reviews are a confirmation of the solutions which ESCOM is already actually implementing at this particular moment in time to address those challenges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And members, we've been listening to ESCOM, but I see ESCOM has saved paper on our expense. The font to. You know, even if I have glasses, but I've got two. Don't try to save on our expense. We don't have to struggle to look at the presentation. When we engage with you, I must be able, when I see on page so and so, and I must get to it quickly and read it. So please don't do that next time. Members, over to you, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Lenzan, in that order.
thank you very much, Chairperson. I do not think I can be very, very positive about the presentation. I really feel that is in some way it's a cover up presentation. What we saw a year and a half ago at Mudupi when we visited the site was from our side we was very impressed. It was clear that we are busy with with a big thing for South Africa. But then suddenly everything is going wrong from there. You promised us at that stage that at the end of 2012, beginning 2013, the first Unit 6 will be in full production. And we down the line, we are close to the end of 2013 and it's still not working. And my complaint is that cost South Africa billions of rand at this stage. The strikes we have there, we can listen to that and we can hear, but from my side I feel really very strong that is bad management at the site at Medupi on this at this stage, because we know each and every year the workers will come with demands for higher salaries and things. We must prepare ourselves for such things, and at this stage it seems to me it do not happen. We wait up when the strike is there, then we try to manage it. And we can't work like that. And if you talk about a new site, we are going to do a number 3 coal site, then we must be prepared for such things from the beginning. Because each and every time there's a strike, it is billions of rands out of the pocket of the taxpayers. And South Africa as a whole can't afford these things anymore. I want to know, it is still the same project manager who were there in the beginning of last year, 2012, when you visited the site. Is it the same person who's still in control there? And then I mentioned a couple of things. Cabling. You mentioned it is poor productivity, but isn't there certain test? We know what is the demand for cables, what is the prospect we need, and then we put it in, and after a while we find out but the things is not right. Again, it is money. I'm thinking of money. I'm thinking of South Africa's economy is in a bad stage at this stage, and then we have this big project and things goes wrong from the beginning. We can't afford it. Where is the control management in this whole situation when we look at the cables? Is it suitable for this project? But we're still continuing with it to find out later it's not working. The welding process. We know from the beginning we haven't got the necessary welders in South Africa. We import foreigners to come and help with welding. And now I'm listening to you, there's a lot of mistakes in welding. Is it the foreigners who are supposed to be qualified people who was supposed to do a decent job, and now we must find out but that was poor? I can't accept it. For such a big project, we can't make such mistakes. It is not acceptable. And you also make a weakness of material. And there I blame the site managers again. The site manager and the project manager, that is people who must have the knowledge. And they must know exactly what we need and this thing is right or not right. So I repeat myself, but I can't accept it. You also said small groups is going in strikes on the site. And then I want to know the companies who's involved on the sites. It is their workers. How can't they manage these people to start with strikes on the job and burn things off? You know what? There was people who was burning things and break things on the site. Really, I'm worried about that. And I want from your side to tell us exactly how is the management working on Medupi. As I feel now, there's no management. And that is what I'm saying. I can't accept these things. And that cost the taxpayers a lot of money. And I want to know, and that had nothing to do with this now, but the project in the Drakensberg, with the different dams there. How is it going there? We do not hear anything of strikes and mismanagement of things going on there. I want to know, we hear of Kusile and we hear of Medupi. But what about that project? And that is also close to nearby finished at this stage. And I really think Chairperson, to close with that, there's nothing to be proud of at this stage, what happened at Medupi. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, thank you, thanks, Chair, and also want to thank for the presentation that has been made. Chair, the responses here are highly technical. We are not technical people. I'm just a layman on the ground who wants to see that electricity is there, there is no load shedding and so on. I just want to question companies that were given contracts. This Hitachi and Alstom, do they have the capacity to do the job? But from what you have said, there are so many mistakes. That's why I'm questioning their skills, whether do they have the capacity to do the job. And there were targets that were put, and those targets were not met. We are having new targets. And I'm just questioning whether we're going to meet these targets, because I've lost confidence at all in these two companies. It's quite clear the mistakes that are there, it clearly shows that they are not competent, they are not skillful. And now, if somebody does that, do you institute penalties? Because billions and billions of rands are involved here. So do you, if somebody does not meet a target, you say, no, it's a mistake, let's correct the mistake, and you just move on without instituting any penalties for the delay. And on the issue of workers, the strikes are there. I just want to understand, because these are international companies, what they pay, is it locally, or is it based on international market, what they are paying the workers? Because they are international companies. So it means what they are paying, is it something that they pay in their own homelands, or it is based on what is being paid here in South Africa? Because I think some of the things that the workers are raising, it's a question of saying, these are temporary jobs. After 2 years or 3 years, we won't be working here. But what will we benefiting from what we are doing? Because it's not only to say these companies should only make a profit at the expense of the workers. So that's why I'm saying the wages that they are getting, are they market related internationally or even local here? But definitely I'm just questioning the manner in which we gave contracts to those two companies. Maybe long time ago we should have opted for other companies, but this one, I don't think we are going anywhere. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just four questions. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Just four questions, Chairperson. Yeah. Not more, not less. Slide 20. Thanks for this new black and white version. At least it's now clear. I'm now able to refer to the slide, Chairperson. Slide 20. This is slide 20. Yeah, where you are talking about the PA. Am I correct? Yes.
There's pages.
Yeah, it's missing. But Chair, let me forget about the slide. But it's about your specific acronym that you are talking about. Which slide is that one?
Slide?
Yes. Yes. There's the PA, the Partnership Agreement. Now, Chair, I've listened carefully when a presentation was made around the PA and the demobilization overview. But now I want to check, linking, Chair, with the statement made by the Minister, where he was talking of a broader agreement that would have been reached at the level of the presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission level. Now, one would like to check if the broader labor agreement at that level of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission ties in with this specific, the site-specific agreement. I've listened to the issues raised, the issues contained in that specific agreement, the site-specific agreement, but you lifted on a few. That's why my interest would be, are you taking tune from up there or not? Then the second one, Chair, is on Hitachi. I've seen the graph which is portraying a stepwise kind of interaction with Hitachi. But now, once more, there was this, I would say, so-called promise, Chairperson, that Hitachi would conclude an out-of-court settlement with Eskom. Has that been able to be honored? I've seen all this, but I didn't hear that actual, you know, or specific obligation where we can sit back and relax and be assured that as at now, Hitachi has honored the out-of-court agreement. And whatever now is taking place is informed at the back of both Eskom and Hitachi's mind that there is this out-of-court settlement. Chair, Honorable Jacobs mentioned in passing this question of our fear as politicians around load shedding. But I want to put it as a question now. Do we have mitigation strategies that are in place to ensure that there will be no load shedding as a result of the delays to the commission, you know, who has been struggling? You are trying to put things together and all that. Now, do we have mitigation strategies so that we are not, Chairperson, at the end of the day, reminded that, remember, you were told that there are these challenges, and now load shedding is as a result of such challenges that we mentioned, and you wouldn't be able, as the select committee, to say no, because they would say, we told you. Remember what they said to the then president. Perhaps they put it like this, and he was unable to have this direct question. I'm not representing him. I'm representing the select committee. The last one, Chair. When you started your presentation, apologies, Chairperson. I had apologized from another meeting and had promised that my phone would be on. So now that's why I came out running. It was because of that. So I didn't hear ESCOM talking about the cost implications of the project. But I know that ESCOM once confirmed that the cost of the project would have increased from 91.2 billion to 105 billion. I'm subject to correction if my information is not correct, because as I'm saying, I was not in when you started your presentation. But now, if that is true, what will ESCOM do with the result of this cost increase, especially in the light of the reduced tariff increase, which was introduced by NERSA? It's only those four questions, Chair. If there is any, it will be followed up after they would have responded. Yes, thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should think ESCOM will remember that Minister Gigaba instructed them to establish a subcommittee focusing on mega projects such as Medupi. How successful has the establishment of this subcommittee been? And how many meetings has this subcommittee had with the minister? I mean to say report back meetings.
Thank you, honorable members. The presentation deals with the technical issues surrounding Medupi. And what your presentation does not deal with is how these delays and problems affect the ongoing electricity supply. We specifically asked you, ESCOM, to deal with these issues in our invitation letter. Why did you not deal with that? And also the other question from me is that labor unions and contractors signed the project labor agreement a few years ago to ensure that cordial relations between the employer and the workers exist. Can you provide the committee with the details of the breakdown of trust between the two parties that resulted in a violent labor protest a month ago? Also, there has been reports that on certain occasions the union bypassed the contractors and made demands directly to ESCOM, even though workers were not employed or contracted by ESCOM. And as a result, ESCOM had to put pressure on contractors to meet workers' demands. How valid are these reports, and what has been ESCOM's role in ensuring that a good working relationship between contractors and workers exists? ESCOM is expected to raise about 50 billion rands more to fill in the gap caused by the 8% tariff increase, which is less than 16% the utility asked for. What is ESCOM's gearing ratio capacity is? Or will ESCOM need further funding from Treasury? Can you respond to that? If time allows us, members will come back on follow-up questions. But for now, that's what's on the table. Thanks. Over to you, sir.
Chair and honorable members, thank you for the questions. I will take them in the order that they were asked. And Chair, in some instances, I will take the sentiments that are raised by the members and perhaps acknowledge them and not necessarily dispute them. I get a very clear message from Honorable Groenewald around the country and his specific disappointment around missing the deadline for the first synchronization. I think this is a matter that we have ourselves been at pain to explain. Chair, what is very important for us when we got to that point was understanding what is really behind the delays, because once we are transparent around what is behind the delays, we can only be in a position to manage it more carefully and periodically report on how we're progressing with rectifying the situation. Indeed, a year ago, when we visited the site, all our focus was on meeting the deadlines that we had at the time. It became very clear only in the latter part of the year, closer to December, the scale and extent of the one fraudulent activities around the welding procedures that had came up and their implications on us. And perhaps my articulation of the issue is not deep enough, but this has really been at the heart of this. There is some very serious fraudulent activities, professional fraudulence that's really happened in that matter, and as I said, it's really being handled by the police. There's at least about two or three forensic work that is deeply at hand to try to understand how such sophistication could have escaped the detection of the professional quality assurance entities that sit in between ourselves as the employer in the terms of the contract, you know, that the contractors themselves were duped into. So it's been quite a significant effect. Having said that, it does not take away the fact that certainly glitches in our control and quality chain were really shown up. As a result of that, we have doubled up our owner's costs in terms of supervising quality assurance more than we had planned for. We have almost put up a lot of stop checks now and additional support to ensure that we pick up this, because when you contract at the nature and level of this kind of work, you expect your contractors to really be doing this. It's what you're paying them for. But we've learned that we need to double up that capability in that areas. Chair, the site management is still the same site team, extremely dedicated team. I think you know, whenever we have people on site to really see how dedicated and how hardworking the individuals are, it tends to be out of contact with the news reporting that we're getting about the progress. Of course, we need to meet schedules, and there's no excuse about it. But the dedication of our people on the ground is quite intense. A lot of hours put into work and trying things. And I can assure this committee that that team is so broken for missing the deadlines that in some instances we have to intervene as executives to really begin to deal with their own health issues and time off, so that they can also become, you know, that we don't destroy and run them down to the ground. That's the level of commitment that they really have. Of course, we need to provide appropriate support, and by creating the visibility around the challenges that are there, we are assisting them. Since we announced this delay, we have had a fundamental change in how we're handling this project within the organization. My predecessor, the FD, spent effectively the last of his 4 months with the company every week in Midweek. I do the same. I spend a lot of time out at the construction sites than we were doing before, just to expedite the machine making, to unlock bottlenecks for this team so that we can really get down to getting the work as quickly as possible. And of course, for us, the proof of the pudding is to deliver within the timelines that we have indicated we have you know, we have dropped the ball in this area and we want to get back, and we can only get back by producing the results. The issues around cabling, Honorable Kundabad, has got to do not so much with the quality of the cables, but it's got to do with the rate at which the cables are being drawn through across different sites. You know, at some point you start having interfaces, people working in the same areas, access becomes an issue, and it's really managing the level at which, how much cables are you really stringing around the areas, how much access are you getting through, how is the planning being coordinated, more resources being brought in, but at some point your resource hits the limit where you can only have so much access around it. And it's an area that is receiving daily tracking. You know, in our morning sessions in there, they track how much kilometers of cabling was pulled up the previous day in relation to the target, and you know, how do we move people around to go through that. our welding issues were not so much foreign or local welder induced, other than saying, as said, you know, the sophistication in the criminality surrounding the forging of the post-weld heat treatment issues, the non-existence of the welding procedures, it's something that is much bigger than even, if I may say this, the individuals doing the work. There's a sophistication network around this that has got certainly commercial interest at their heart, and that's the focal point that we're really trying to get down into. It could have happened to any welder, so it's more about institutional approach and ethical approach to doing work as it needs to deal with. Some of the inspectors that we are using here have been on many sites across the world, and they themselves are quite shocked at the level of what really transpired in this instance. We indicated earlier on that the project labor agreement that we had before was an agreement between contractors and their workers. And as ESCOM, we said, you know, the workers on site are not our workers, they belong to you, you manage them and you deal with the issues. Which would have been an ordinary approach in any of the South African construction site. What has transpired here is clearly a realization that the relationship between these two parties is of material importance to us as ESCOM, because if nothing works there, we become the affected party and you see the delay. So we had to go in and, in this new partnership agreement, begin to say we want to be party to this so we can resolve issues that have got to do with hygiene and relations here. The contractors still have to manage their workers, see to the individual relationship that exists, but there's a structured framework that we all got into based on the understanding that we are all working on the same site. So a relationship between a contractor and his employees become relevant when they're working off there. It's one side, one team. But once you have multiple contractors working through here, there's an interaction. And that interaction, unless it's you know, carefully managed, leads to what we have seen before. We have gone out on record to indicate that as we got closer to some of the challenges that are being experienced in some of these companies, we actually realized that in some of the contractors, there's just not enough capacity to manage workers, to supervise, to build relationships that are really consistent with the norms and traditions we are aspiring for as a society today. And which we ourselves, as ESCOM, when you look at it, say, like, but this is not how we treat people, this is not how we manage relationships. And so part of the partnership agreement is to really develop a culture on site where all of us agree on some norms and standards, and all of us aspire to deal with those, and we can quickly see where there are challenges and support the teams that are in challenge, both from a contractor side, but also from organized labor perspective. And hence the context of the partnership agreement. It defines a new way of engaging in society. And I must be honest, when we looked at this, it actually defines fundamentally a new way in which industrial relations in the country may go. When we looked at this, we saw things that previously would not have been of any relevance to any major employer like ourselves. But going forward, this is a new beginning. It's a new norm. From one project to the other, we expect that this is going to be the kind. And I think just latching on to the question asked later on about what is the relationship between what we have done and what we anticipate to happen within the broader framework of the presidential infrastructure project, we have actually written a paper to the PICC sharing our experiences of how we have evolved in this area and flagging some of the things that we believe are going to be important to be addressed in the mega projects going forward. What happens with labor issues on our sides on this project are beyond the impact on ESCOM and the country now. Our ability to attract foreign competent companies to work here is going to be influenced by the perception that they get around how labor needs to be managed here, how labor needs to be treated here, and what is acceptable and not acceptable in this country. And we shared some of our experiences, and more importantly, shared the evolution of some of the solutions that collectively organized labor, ourselves as ESCOM, and contractors have come up with to try to make our sites work. And in many areas, other than an emphasis on ensuring that the mega projects also deliver skill development and job creations to deal with poverty alleviation and so on, we have been more on the forefront of meeting these things head on and making solutions as we come through. So we have shared some of this engagement with our PSCC. We've written a paper for them. As we march along the guidelines of skills development, how do you ensure the project leave a legacy, but we bring in some of the practicalities that that come into that space. It is this is a learning curve, it's a new normal, and we are at least not short of commitment to wanting to make it work. And I can tell you that the project labor agreement is much a product of ESCOM's drive towards a new arrangements, but also proudly owned by organized labor and the contractors. Organized labor's view was, you ESCOM cannot sit on the side and say this is not your issue. It affects all of us, and we have clearly gotten to that point. And I can assure the committee that, Chairperson, your specific question relating to whether in this process we have pressurized contractors at some point, contractors have come willingly to this part because we all understand the implications, both on their businesses, on the country imperatives, and also on ESCOM schedule and cost, if we do not get this right. And everybody has come to the party around that. In these meetings, I sit there personally, I chair some of these meetings with the contractor CEOs. It's all about trying to make things work in a new space. And there's things that they will take away to the other projects which are not necessarily ESCOM related, and that the trade unions themselves will take to the other sites themselves. So there's a lot of working around helping. The smaller guys are much more, the bigger guys are more organized than the smaller guys in terms of the contractors. It's about ensuring that, we create support for everyone, and we're not leaving a small issue. How much small it could be for us in some ways is a big issue in some corner, and it needs to be attended to equally and as quickly as possible. This we have learned. You cannot wish it away. You have to address those issues. And the site forums provide opportunities to raise these things, and they're tracked. They're not just left until they come back as a big bang. We have to get the site forums functional. We have to get them to have the credibility they need to have, because we're coming from an environment of hostility, a lot of mistrust still going on. We have to end our stripes in seeing how the site forums work. And as I said, at Kusile they're working much more smoother. At Midupi is a process, given the recent violent activities and mistrust that's come out of it. But we're committed to making it work. Again, on the issue of Ingula, you are right, we talked a little about it. Another shift we're really wanting to do, that we have a number of mega projects, Ingula, Kusile, and Midupi. Midupi is Unit 1, but of course it's the first of the 12 we're building. Ingula is scheduled for coming to completion at the end of next year. We are on track. It's looking quite, still on track, a slippage of a number of days here and there. The labor issues there have also been a bit of an effect, but not as prolonged as at Midupi. And we are hoping that we can assist the major contractors there as well to synchronize their work routines for us to be able to bring all those four units in operation at the end of 2014. The next questions from Honorable Jacobs around the capacity of our major contractors, Hitachi and Alstom. Yes, some of the issues that have really come up, if you look at the welding issues and the quality control issues, you'd have expected the major operator like Hitachi to have really picked them up. But again, as I said, the sophistication of the criminology in here is really quite complex, and we're looking at how do we recover from this. From our side, the issue is more doubling up on supervision around quality, both at the construction yards and on site. And we still need to get deep into understanding what precisely unfolded in this space. We're seeing areas where we push both contractors for additional capacity, given that when they bid for these two jobs, Kusile and Midupi, the undertaking was that they have the capacity to execute both in parallel. What we are seeing is that the global pressures around resources and so on have meant that in some areas they have not lived up to what we expected of them. And I'll come back to this issue when I address the issue of the bond that the Honorable Mlenzana raised, because there are some conditions that we really wanted around the bond, which deals with one of these issues. ASTOM as well, around the CNI, a lot of support, you know, our owner's development costs have almost doubled because we have engineers, our own engineers sitting by the side of ASTOM's engineers in Paris to go with them through the design process to make sure that we close up gaps timelessly for our own benefit. There's a point in the execution of these projects where you almost have to work with your contractor to get out of this messy situation that you are in, than to just say, I'll pull off and leave. It costs more. So it's a lesser of a bitter pill to swallow, to try to say, how can we work collectively to deal with this and solve it? Of course, as we do so, we do institute penalties. I've indicated we pull the bonds on ASTOM. We continue to do payment withholding where they've not met the critical milestones, and we do it to both Hitachi and ASTOM. For a number of months, actually, Hitachi was working without getting any payment from our side, to the point that in some area we had to be now concerned about the financial viability, because also when they go belly up, it comes back to us around, you know, the risk onto our structure. So we're managing both, and I'll talk to that specifically as I speak about the bond, because in the bond we are addressing the issue of supervision, critical skills required to execute the project, but also financial viability for them to continue to do the work. We don't want to wake up in the morning and they fall it short, because that will really hurt us big time as a country. From the question around the rates, Chairperson, are they paying local or international rates? The committee will recall that Hitachi and ASTOM are major contractors at a high level. As part of our localization content, we enforced quite a requirement to have them having and utilizing South African companies as much as possible, so that we can create the local jobs and localize. So Hitachi has got major contractors like Marion Roberts, being the major contractor at Midupi, at Kusile, they've got the joint venture between Marion Roberts and the other construction companies. Essentially, all the big construction companies, in one way or the other, are working at both sides. And they do their REMS and benefits, remuneration and benefits, within the ambit of their practices elsewhere in the country, in the construction industry, governed by the construction industry bargaining unit. So their rates are local rates. If I can come on to that. Having said this, when we looked at the partnership agreement now, it became very clear that because of the different bargaining units, you had sites where similar trades but belonging to different bargaining units had different minimum rates. So someone will do exactly the same thing, but because they are with Hitachi, they come from construction and not from a metals bargaining unit, someone is earning a little bit less. This creates this disgruntlement. And part of the partnership agreement was to agree on minimum rates applicable across the sites, which are project specific. So if you ask me, from a project perspective, our projects are better than the bargaining rates from the different industries separately. And we have sought to really create the sufficient incentive to motivate workers from across all sides of remaining focused on the issues. The issue of remuneration is one, in as far as the short duration of the project is concerned. The second one is around skill development and how are we assisting workers who are participating in these projects to be able to be employable to the next projects. If you look at the project like Midupi, the bulk of our employees, they are first-time employees coming from within the region. How do we skill them up in a manner that they can go and look for jobs elsewhere? And as we do this, we are conscious of the fact that going to the presidential infrastructure projects, these are the skills that are going to be required for it. So they elaborate programs of portfolios, developing portfolios of competencies and the appropriate skilling with the CITAS to ensure that the skills are transportable through to to the next projects. It is for this reason that, you know, the continuity around what's going to happen beyond Midubi and Kusile needs to be as clear as soon as possible, so that people can see that beyond these projects, there's other areas in which the country will require the skills. In fact, what you want to do is to have this sequence so that you can be able to move the skills from one point to the other. And that becomes beneficial from a learning curve point of view. If you go into the next mega project, you have really dealt with civil skills, different artisan skills, which you don't have to start all over again by redeveloping when you go through them. The questions from Honourable Lenzana deals with the PA. Again, as I said, the PA deals more with skills development, creating a peaceful space within work area by having clear mechanisms around dispute resolutions, around a number of what I call hygiene factors on how we're treating employees generally. But as I said, you know, there is no blueprint on the operational details. We're finding this as we go through, and we're backfeeding with the, you know, with sharing our learnings with the PICC in this areas. The out of court settlement that you allude to, Honourable Mlezan, has three elements to it. We could have easily pulled the Hitachi bond, but that, you know, what concerned us was the viability of Hitachi to beyond that point continue to do the work. One, their performance to date meant that they were not getting paid over a period of time, so their cash situation was becoming a bit dire. Their lack of supervision in some areas, in particular supervisory levels, that to pick up issues like quality and so on, was pathetic. Nowhere close to where we wanted to be. And yet, we are sitting with assurances from the parent company, Hitachi Japan, that they'll support the local entities. We are not seeing this. So when we tried to put up the settlement, we wanted three things. One, we wanted to, monetarily, we wanted Hitachi. This performance bonds start at 100%, and as you construct and you go, you know, you progress towards completing your construction, the value of the bond decreases. So it means the pain to the contractor gets less if you are to be pulling back that money, because it's not as much as it was at the beginning. So we've asked them to restore those bonds back to that level so they can have more skin in the game. They have more money at the risk for non-performance issues from us, which we can now pull out. So it's a lot more money that they put back into they've restored the bonds into that level for these first three units where we are going through the initial glitches, and so they've put it back to 100%. This we're already sitting at 50% respectively. The second condition was that they must prove to us sufficiently evidence that Hitachi Japan has actually put in resources, human resources, to be able to do our work. Because why you have problems is because you've got gaps in terms of the technical capabilities of people that you have. And between March and today, they have sent us all the people that we had said they need to fill in terms of vacancies by name, by location, and we know where they are seated in our structure. So they've brought in additional supervisory capabilities from some of their projects overseas, because we said we are not second best, we are not second class, we need the best people you have in your teams to be on our projects. We need your best welders to be here so that we're not having this quality issues or supervisory issues. So we have a list of those that have put forward. The third one was we needed the Hitachi Japan to also assure us that they'll continue to give Hitachi South Africa a lifeline of making sure they've got operating cash to be able to run their operations. And they've also fulfilled that conditions by giving us, showing us all the guarantees, financial support, to be able to allow them to be able to do the work. This for us was critical, because when we bought into them, when we contracted with them, the idea was a competent company that's got capability to execute, and we needed to see these two dimensions addressed. The issue of the delay, and Chairperson, apologies for not explicitly dealing with it in this presentation. Of course, we have taken into account the fact that the unit is intended to be on synchronization in the second half of next year. But in our scenarios and our mitigation scenarios, we have played a number of scenarios of saying, what if you have another delay of some month in terms of the, we have a, you know, within our organization, we've really been driven by three key things now, and the CEO has simplified it. The first one is focusing on delivering our build program, which is part of this work that we're dealing with. The second one is ensuring that we bring around a generation sustainability, i.e. ensuring that there's enough capacity to provide the demand of the country's electricity. And within that, we have a keeping the lights on strategy that looks at all scenarios and making the interventions where necessary to plug the gap around the supply. So we're very focused on that. And the third one, of course, is how we live and we'll drive the business after the NERSA 8% ruling as opposed to the 16% that we require. What are the structural changes we need to make within the company in terms of reducing our consumption internally and improving efficiencies so that we can have the business still meeting the objectives of keeping the lights on. So within our strategy of generation sustainability, of providing and keeping the lights on, we have catered for all possible combinations to mitigate the shortage of power. It's important that we do that, but that we also remain focused on getting the units on time as indicated. And for me, as I said before, we understand what the delays are around, and we have to manage that on a daily basis going forward. And we have avoid the surprise elements, but we can also take decisions on time. The cost implications of the delay indeed is an increase up to 105 billion rands, primarily driven by delay costs. The fact that we're having teams working for much more longer on sites than initially anticipated. And some portion of it had to do with an increase in our own owner's development cost. We have had to beef up our teams to check each and every part that we'd ordinarily not be checking on to ensure that we don't have any further delays. When we announced the increase to 105 billion, we also indicated that in this 105, there's a lot of claims that we have against contractors, and we will be going after our contractors where we have contractual rights to recover some of these costs from our contractors. We're doing all those processes in there, but the 105 number is the overall number. It does not account for any of the claims but from contractors that we'll be pursuing, and our claims are not time barred. We you know, our contracts are structured that you know, we have all the time to go back to contact us to open this up, and we're sequencing these activities as well. The Honorable Mabitsa's questions around the subcommittee from the minister. Indeed, the minister requested that we set up a board and an exco subcommittee for the bill review. These committees have been operational now for a good 3 months. The exco committee meets once every 3 weeks, the board committee meets once a month. The committees deal with all the issues pertaining to the schedule, cost, and safety track record of the build program, Medupi, Kusile, Ingula, and the transmission line construction, because that's also important. And the committee produced its first report to the minister, formal report in a new format to the minister in the last month. This report, I understood, will be dealt with by the chairman and the minister. That meeting may have or may have not taken place, but the briefings to the DG happen along those lines. And they contain essentially all the issues similar to how we cover them in these meetings. It's very down to the level of operational issues. Two things that are sitting before the committee as we speak is the finalization on the Sitachi bond, as indicated, around the final settlement, the issue around the strategy on control and instrumentation around step-in rights and where do we come through, and general overall monitoring of how the rest of the execution really works. In the last few months, we had our hands full with issues of dealing with the labor issues as they come up. But the committees are functional. I can assure the committee on that. Chair, I've indicated that the planning for electricity supply for the next 18 to 24 months does account for various scenarios of possible delays on Medupi site. As said, that's for risk management more than encouraging relaxedness on our side. Our focal point is really getting back to the second half of next year, as we have indicated. The violent protest, I tried to touch on it earlier on, of what really erupted. As said, this was very unfortunate, given that the partnership agreement had just been signed on the 12th of June, and on the 24th of July, you had this violent protest emanating, primarily triggered by this miscommunication around those two key issues of commuting allowance and the traveling allowance. We had gone into session thereafter with Labour, threshed this out, and agreed. One of the outcomes of this was getting ourselves into a space where communication on all key decisions gets signed by all parties, and all parties have got the same script from which we talk. And this way we manage the accuracy of what has been decided on and do not create expectations that are not correct. Having said that, it was also important that we restore discipline even in the times when we disagree. And so all parties condemned the violent nature of the strike, and everybody have accepted that due process needs to be followed where there's clear evidence of the perpetrators of these activities. And we have, as ESCOM, supported contractors that they need to follow the process of the disciplinary process to its letter, to ensure that there is proper accountability put where it belongs, but doing so within the confines of the agreed disciplinary process rules and so on. The partnership agreement is intended to really foster a new way of engaging between employers and contractors, with us being party to it. Before, at the PLA, we're really standing by. With the PA, we are part of this. And as I said, all these meetings are happening with all three parties present, as opposed to before CHEN. And it's, as said, defining a new norm. And it's a new norm that we have to get used to, but also support and gives space for engagement around it. There has been reports, I know on TV, about us having been seen as soft as ESCOM, and capitulating to Labour's demands, or being a soft target that Labour prefers to come to as opposed to going to contractors. I think those are unfounded. We have been quite clear and have put our foot down where we believe that Labour's requirements were onerous and unrealistic, but we've also been very clear where we felt that supervisory behaviours on the side of contractors, some contractors have been not up to the level of the society we expect and that we ourselves as ESCOM want to be associated with. And it is the context that defines how we're engaging in a space. That's about doing things that we all could be proud of, given that we work on the same side. And I think it's unfortunate when these agreements are all signed willingly by all parties, and for any party to go out of it and accuse anyone, it will be quite disingenuous and not in the spirit of what we're trying to do in that area. There are challenges, Chairperson, we are working on those. And I think there's mutual benefit, both for us as ESCOM, but also for contractors as well. The issue of funding, the ESCOM has come out quite clear that we are actually in a very tight position in as far as managing the business going forward, given the ruling that the NERSA has given to us of 8%. We have additional borrowing capacity, we think, of about 50 billion in the next 5 years, but we have to find other ways in which we could be able to live with the obligations that we have and the financial allocations that we're sitting with. The minister has instructed us to work very closely, and we are well supported by the department in this area, in seeing how do we see the next 5 years unfolding. That work is ongoing, and the minister is sponsoring it, and it will involve different spheres of government at the appropriate time. Chair, that work is ongoing, and it will be shared once it's ready. But I can assure the committee that it is a matter that is very high on the agenda of the minister, and both ourselves and the ministry officials are day to day engaging on what our options are internally. As said, the three areas we are focusing on, one of them is actually living with this 8%. Internally, we have begun processes of really increasing efficiency, re-looking at how we do business completely, and we are beginning to unfold some of those strategies. We have instituted, for instance, a hiring freeze across the business. We are no longer recruiting. We are working out contracts that are lapsing. We are re-looking at various ways in which we could save money from some of our big contracts in coal in particular, but also changing our whole approach towards our suppliers. And naturally, this will bring pressure to South Africa Incorporated. From a supplier point of view, you will start getting noises of how tough we're getting in negotiations and looking for more and more discounts everywhere to try to reduce our cost base. Chair, I'll stop there in the responses to the questions, and unless there are any follow-up questions coming.
Honourable
Majesty.
Let me be the last one, because what I want to speak about is not something from the report, but is connected to the report.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on this increase. I'm happy that it's confirmed that you have now this 105 billion. But now, Chair, my initial question, when I asked what will ESCOM do as a result of this, has not been responded to the manner in which I would like. Perhaps let me say why I asked this question. I asked this question, Mr. President, linking it to the 2014 deadline. And remember, Chairperson, you always say, particularly these days, that come 2014, May, we are now talking months, we would be out of here. But we wouldn't like a situation, where when we are no more here, there's nothing about us. We would want a legacy. And when we talk legacy, it's a multi-party arrangement. It's not that we would want a particular party to say, we have done this. But as this select committee, we would like a situation where we pride ourselves that during our term, this is what we achieved. And it would be worrying that we keep on promising the communities that come 2014, we would have met the deadlines. But now, looking at these challenges that keep on cropping up, one becomes worried. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. During my constituency work, I came across a man who was very, very bitter about the treatment he got at Medupi Power Station. He was working under pit vest construction, and the owner, whether the owner is the manager, but is part of that thing, is Hendrix. He just told them that is the end of the road. They must go home, some of them. And it's almost 2 years now. They are going from post to pillar, trying to get assistance, but they are knocking against a hard wall. He doesn't answer the phones. He doesn't respond to emails. He's just not available to be contacted. So, as I was listening when you were responding, I could understand and I perceived your feelings to be genuine. And you've been very, very, very confident and straight to the point. But I would like to say this, that there are two ways facts and the truth. And facts are there. We can put them in any other way that is cogent. But above the truth, the facts, there is truth. And the truth does not mean an opposite of life. The truth goes beyond facts. And the way you've been presenting, I could feel that your facts, you've gone beyond facts, is the truth. So that's why I'm having confidence in you to go and deal with this issue. Because it was just through luck, by luck, that I came across this man. He's seen, he's just, you can see he's frustrated. He doesn't know what to do. He's got a family, and it's not the only one. And maybe it's not the only construction. So I will give you his name and the contacts. And I should think in Eskom there's somebody who can speak to vendor. You give that vendor man these cell numbers to get the real story, a genuine thing from the horse's mouth, so that you can deal with it correctly. So I will give you after this meeting, understanding that you know how dangerous it is to reveal this man's name. We do not want him to be victimized by contractors. Thank you.
Honorable Jacobs.
Yeah, Chair. After all what is said and done, are we going to meet the new targets?
Okay, and there's the other question that wasn't responded to, the guy raised, of Eskom operating at the margin, tight reserve margin of less than 8%. And then if you can tell us, by saving the 49M campaign, is it really working? Are you really saved? How much have you saved? I think that's the last round of questions.
Chairperson, I'll start with the last question, if I may. because yesterday, actually, here in Cape Town, the minister and the ESCOM team again communicated to the nation the status of the system for the last 3 months on how we have come through the winter period, and in it, in terms of how we succeeded, for the first time this past winter, we actually did maintenance in winter. We had about 9 units scheduled for maintenance, 5 of those which were completed in the winter period, 3 are still ongoing to be completed in the next month, and 1 will also be executed to close up the number. And yet we are able to not load shed. It's happened. One, because of the planning around our maintenance, which we have been working on for the last 2 years. It's happened because of the contribution of South Africans who responded to the call to save electricity. And we indicated that every time we flighted the need to save electricity on TV, we got in excess of about 300 megawatts being saved for those instances. So there is clear evidence that South Africans are beginning to respond. But we are saying it's not enough. This summer, we are asking South Africans to start living lightly, and we're intensifying the campaign to individualize the consumption of electricity, where we each become aware of our own footprint of electricity and try to improve and reduce it as we go on. And the ministry has been quite great in assisting us on a new campaign that we launched before the winter around Beating the Peak, if you recall, Chair, that's now forming part of the regular broadcast with SABC, and it's worked quite well. So these campaigns do work. There is still room for improvement. We have different challenges going into the summer, and we're going to focus on trying to reduce those. This is one of the tools that we're focusing on to try to manage the demand, together with additional running of our emergency diesels, both here in Cape Town and in Mossel Bay, and some of the tools and levers we have contractually of reducing some of our major
users during particular time frames. Going forward and for the next season, for the next year ahead, we're looking at the combination of all these tools again. What's very important for us is to have a really clear foresight and cater for a number of scenarios. We really get caught if we get too surprised closer to the time, and then we have no time to really respond back. So going back to the issue of the timing of Midweek and whether it's going to be on time, it's all our intentions to deliver this unit in the second half of next year. We have narrowed down the problem areas to those that I've explained. Around welding, we've got technical solutions around it. We must just do the work. Around the control instrumentation, we're working closely with Alstom, and in the next week or two, we'll make decisions about getting replacement if need be, to protect our interest, the South African interest, and deal with the commercial issues if required. So we'll arrive at the bridge, and we are comfortable that that bridge is still within the timelines of us meeting the date that we have. We have to work on improving the relationship on site so that the site can be functional. There's nothing as very painful as going to that site and it is dead quiet, and yet it has to be filled with workers, 13,000-14,000 every day, workers who really need jobs in a country that is having this confrontation simply because we are unable to sort out our IR issues. So we are working this partnership agreement to try to really mitigate that. It's hard work, and we're really having a lot more closer scrutiny on activities, and the department is all the time with us in really helping us through these challenges. Chair, and that's really the challenges as we speak, we put them out. It's not our intention to come back and say we have told you about this. Our job is to solve these challenges, and we really understand it. Our job, we are employed to solve these problems. Reporting them is one thing, and anybody can do that. Our key job is to solve them, and we understand that responsibility quite well. I take the issue, Honourable Mabitsa, around the demobilization issues relating to, and these are the kind of things I said, you know, creating this visibility at site level helps us deal with, because the capacity of some contractors varies, and these painful stories, you know, they may look small, but they're very big to a family and to individuals. I would like to take some details around it. Suffice to say that we have a demobilization protocol of, you know, what are the rights of the workers when demobilization has to happen, how do we prepare for it, what are the rules, what are the norms that needs to be observed by everyone. And ours now in the area of the partnership agreement is to ensure consistent application of those. And having these structures on site should help us be able to zoom into the areas that are problematic in that area. We have now reorganized even how we're handling industrial relations from both project perspective as ESCOM. We're saying we have one ESCOM team, we have two sides that are working, but we must be consistent. So we're putting even our best foot forward between Midweek and Kusile to try to address this matter. So I'll leave it at that level. Chair, it's our intentions to meet the second quarter of next year, as said, and we'll periodically provide progress to the country on how we are dealing with this area. And yesterday, also at the briefing, this progress was given. We will make it part of our regular reporting. In the last week, we've started also communicating more about some of the milestones that I spoke about, as you know, finishing up some other critical areas that we should really be more talking about them, so we don't have one big bang at the end, another delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Department. We thank you for coming. We are now, we want you to, as ESCOM, not to wait for us to invite you, mm-hmm. because we are, our program is very tight. But if you can communicate with this committee regularly so that we are on board. As Honorable Mlenzana said earlier, we want to understand what is really happening, so that when you stand, you tell the people, I was part of that select committee. So please communicate with us regularly so that we assist the people of South Africa. And with the 49M, I'm still waiting. This committee is still waiting. Mapelo, you remember, we said we want programs to communities. Yes.
I'll leave it at that. But let me thank you very much for coming. We won't see you, but we will see you in the... communications. Honorable Mabija's issue, if you respond, we would also like to know that you have assisted the person who has got those people who have got a problem. And there is other one that Honorable Mabija called me. The one of the, is that the, No, it's not you. I'm sorry about it. It's another entity that we deal with the other department. Yes. Thank you. Did you want to say something?
Yes, I wanted to request ESCOM to keep in touch with our secretary. If possible, we get something from you through her during the week from the 17th up to the 20th. We'll be having a meeting where we will be then, so that we can know how far have you gone as from today.
Thank you very much. The meeting is then adjourned, but the committee is still has still some business. So if you can excuse us, and farewell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.